Joining me now to discuss is Stanislav Krapivnik, a former U.S. Army officer, military and geopolitical expert, and host of the In the Eyes of Truth podcast, who joins us from Moscow. Stas, thanks so much for taking the time to join me.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Great to have you back on the show. Now, I want to get your take on the latest here, as I know that we are now on day 17 of this illegal war of aggression waged by the US and Israel against Iran. And while President Trump still claims that the Iranian military has been defeated as it somehow continues to launch drone and missile attacks, he's also demanding help with what he describes as the small endeavor of reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Yet none of the countries he's called on, be it China, France, Japan, South Korea, the UK, none of them have agreed. So, how do you view the position that the US is in right now as Trump is also moving into this new phase of everything that I don't like is AI generated?
I'm not sure what you're talking about, actually. I have no idea because this war ended, 13 days ago. I mean, Trump said it's a four-day endeavor. We've defeated them. I think he's defeated them like every day ever since. They're totally defeated. They have nothing left. We've destroyed everything. They don't have lights on. They don't remember how to read and write anymore. I mean, we've defeated them. So I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, that's, it's all AI. There are no rockets. Nothing is blowing up in Tel Aviv. Nobody else is getting hit. American planes weren't downed. It's all artificial intelligence. So we're just fighting artificial intelligence war right now. So, everybody's going through the Straits of Hormuz. Everything's fine. And the well, price of oil, it's not real either. That's all AI generated. That's it. And by the way, but you can't see any of the images, satellite images, because those have all been banned by U.S. companies. Cannot longer show for the last 2 weeks or so. They've disappeared offline. Luckily, there's Russian and Chinese. Oh, I'm sorry, those are AI too. So,
Of course.
I'm reading Trump right? I mean, I'm not missing anything. And then there's I listened to Hacksaw. That was fun. I've never heard, pardon my French, so much bullshit in such a small amount of time. I'm not quite sure how his teeth didn't fall out, his tongue didn't run off. He was lying so hard. He's just like, geez, wait, let me open the curtain and see what the color of the sky is in this reality. Because it just it's incredible. I mean, they're in panic spin mode, and they have no idea how to go any further. I mean, literally, these people are out of ideas. I think they were out of ideas day five, for the most part. Because the war had to end by 4 days. That's what Trump said. 4 days we'll win, and then we go home.
Yeah, and then you've got Pete Hegseth over there, right, being like, "Oh yeah, it's fine. The Strait of Hormuz is open. You just have to worry about, Iran shooting at your ship. But other than that, it's open for traffic." And it's like, for the average American, right, they're dealing with gas prices now growing up. We have reports of the U.S. contemplating boots on the ground. I mean, I know that there is no quote unquote easy off ramp for the US here, but are you surprised at all by the reports we are seeing that we could be getting deeper and deeper into what is another forever war that Trump promised he would avoid at all costs?
One of my updates that I'm doing it every 2 days right now because things aren't moving quite as fast as they were earlier when I was doing a daily update on this. But one of my updates, I went deep into each position that they could actually try to take, and the pluses, minuses, well, mostly minuses of trying that endeavor. But to tell the truth, as I said, I don't believe for a second they're going to do it. It's a suicide. Like just sending, it's not just sending those men off to die. It's political suicide. I may be wrong. I wish I wasn't, but I think I may be wrong. I think they're crazy enough at this point, desperate enough at this point, they may actually send these guys off to die. If any Americans want to understand what's going to happen to this Marine Expeditionary Unit, if they try to take Card Island, or if they try to take the northern coast of the Straits of Hormuz. There was, because it isn't there anymore. It's still on a map, though. A village called Klinki. Klinki is on the Russian side of the Dnieper, a little north of Kherson. So the Ukrainians, about 2 years ago, they dropped a Klinki. Just understand is what was three rows, three streets, parallel streets, and a couple intersecting streets, and one road that was coming perpendicular into this little community on the riverside. And swamps behind them, one way in, one way out for the most part. So proof of concept, Zelensky dropped a Marine company in there, showed, see, we can grab land on the Russian side. And the Americans backing him and the English said, fine, now hold it and expand that beachhead. Horrible place for a beachhead with one road going in and out. Well, Russian troops figured out pretty quickly, well, we can't get in there to knock them out because one road going in and out, but they're in artillery range. So for the next 4 months, Ukraine sent in waves, two battalions worth of infantry, or about Marines, about 2,000 Marines, that then proceeded to get turned into fish food on a constant daily basis until they'd lost over 2,000 dead to hold a village of no real significance on a beachhead they couldn't expand off of and they couldn't go anywhere. That's what's going to happen to the U.S. Marines if they land north of Hormuz. It's dead man walking. Not only because behind them is the straits, so a water obstacle, big water obstacle. Ahead of them are mountain ranges. They grab this little coastal region. But I mean, if you think about it, and proof of concept was done by MI6 and the Ukrainians to a Russian tanker about 2 months ago when it was passing near one of the Aegean islands. They attacked it with FPV drones with RPG rounds stuck underneath them. I mean, that's common practice on the line of contact, but they use it against a civilian ship. And yeah, and they overwhelmed it and they set it on fire and there were explosions. Well, guess what? Who else can do that? You don't need expensive missiles, land to sea missiles. You need about 100 kids, probably whose parents or brothers or sisters just got murdered by the US Israeli airstrikes. With a VR visor and a couple dozen drones and RPG rounds stuck underneath them. And you put them out underneath the trees or underneath some cliff overhangs or buildings, whatever is in the mountains. You try to find them all, but you'll see lots and lots of drones flying down. It's a swarm tactic. You can't take them all out. Drones are cheap, they can keep popping. Okay, it's like a video game. Oh, my life's up because a drone got killed. Next drone in, next life. Let's see how many we can get through the neck to that destroyer. I mean, that's the reality of it. And it's not some big firing point shooting off missiles. It's you can have a bunch of 15, 14, 15-year-olds with drones, lots of them. Believe me, it'll overwhelm any defense you've got. And you'll see maybe not sink a destroyer, but damage is so hard and cause a lot of casualties. It's not going to go anywhere again. And that's the reality. Those guys hit the beach. Those drones, I mean, they've got no prepared positions. They hit that beach. Those drones are going to be waiting for them. Now, they're going to be getting chased by drones left and right. Is you know, welcome to the Ukrainian front. Except the Ukrainian front, each side digs in, so it has some survival capability. Here, they're in an open beach with no capability of digging in because they're going to be hunted from the moment they land. That's what they're going to be facing. That's modern technology. And if they're going to try to get expand out to, you know, it's a 30-kilometer range longer. On these drones with bigger battery packs. So if you want to push the enemy back so they can't send drones into that area, you've got to go up the mountains. And that creates a whole different issue. And there's no way a 2,500 men or even the 82nd Airborne, if you can get them across somewhere, 12,000 men are going to be able to take and hold those mountains, especially when there's about 100,000, 200,000 Iranians sitting there waiting. Waiting, you know, and rubbing their hands together to get revenge for their dead women and children. They may do that. I mean, I guess they're insane enough at this point, or desperate enough. I don't know. I mean, this is you're watching Trump self-destruct. If you compare Trump one to Trump two, the way he talks, you already tell that there's dementia setting in. Just the choice of words, the choppiness of the phrases. He's talking more and more like a 12, 13-year-old or 11-year-old instead of, you know, concrete, long thought out sentences. And the word choice. So you're looking at, I think, intellectual decline as it is, mental decline. And now with the stress and everything else, and having his, pardon my French, arse handed to him on a platter, by the Iranians, are supposed to have been done for. Or, you know, 13 days ago, the pressure has just got to be mounting and mounting and mounting. And he's delusional, you know. And you're right. He said, you know, everything that I don't like, it's all artificial intelligence. I don't see it. La 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 la. It's not here. La la la. And that's what you're hearing from. It's this the guy that runs the U.S., like it or not. That's who it is. Like I said, it says something about the U.S. political system when the best choices out of 330 million people was Biden, Harris, or Trump. I mean, my God, you can't find anybody better than those.
Yeah, and now you look at the situation that we're in, and of course, he runs on a platform of no new wars, right? As they all do. And then he comes in and he gives us the one war that the US establishment has managed to not get into for the last couple of decades. And I did think it was notable. You've got Axios reporting that in addition to trying to assemble a so-called Hormuz coalition, Trump is also weighing a seizure of Iran's critical oil depot on Karg Island. So kind of like what you were saying, right? These ideas that are going around of, okay, we're going to send troops in here, we're going to do this and that. I mean, when you look at what that would actually accomplish versus the cost of all of that. I mean, initially they went into this as a regime change war, right? The idea was that you go in, you carry out decapitation strikes, you take out Iran's top leader, the government falls, and then you do what you want. That hasn't worked out. So, how do you view the kind of changing goals here to where I'm not even really sure we have a goal at this point other than to terrorize the Iranian people for refusing to overthrow their government like Trump told them to?
Rachel, that is the goal. I mean, first of all, Kar Island would be even worse because trying to supply it is even harder. You're going across the entire Persian Gulf, and it's flat, pretty flat open area too. So, that it's going to be hunting season by drone operators for any Americans there. Plus, it's much harder to supply them for obvious reasons. If you bring in C-130s, they get in within that non-existent but somehow very functional anti-aircraft system. There's that. If you try by sea, you got to go all the way across the Persian Gulf to bring in supplies. So it's a death sentence either way, and there's not a lot of places to run and hide. It's relatively a flat area. So that's one. U.S. has this rally around the flag thing, even though almost every single war America's ever been in and has been a war of aggression, with very few exceptions. And most of them never been declared, which, by the way, is unconstitutional, but who cares? So they usually still get a rally around the flag. This time, there was no rally around the flag. The vast majority of the population, except the diehard MAGA who are brain dead because we'll follow anything Trump does because it's our guy, it's our turn. The other half of MAGA just went, okay, screw this. We're not a part of this. We've left. So other than that percentage of diehard MAGA, nobody's supporting this war, and they're trying to sell it. God only knows how they're trying to sell it. That's one of the reasons the topic changes every single day while we're there, because I don't know, maybe they have focus groups, maybe they need better focus groups. I'm pretty sure they probably do have focus groups. How would you like it if we did this? Right, because it's nuclear weapons. Okay, you don't care about nuclear. They're arresting and beating their women and children. Oh, but don't look at the videos where you walk down the shopping centers in Iran and the women aren't covered and half of them are got pur some of them have purple hair and all that. Oh, that doesn't quite fit into the oppressive. There are religious sections of the city that women are covered from head to toe. Those are religious neighborhoods. The non-religious neighborhoods are the more liberal ones. It's hard to tell them apart from any other. From any Western country, for that matter, the way they dress and they talk and they what you see on there, so the oppression angle doesn't work. Okay, what's next? They're terrorists. They've been killing Americans for 47 years. We can't show you where because it doesn't exist. But just trust us. Okay, that doesn't work. And they're just going down the list. Well, let's try this again. Maybe this time it'll work. And it's every day. You're right. Every day they just change topics. They change the mission. I can't even call it mission creep. There's no mission. I mean, other than that, Iran should have surrendered in 4 days. It didn't. So yeah, you're right. Let's terrorize the public because we don't know what else to do. And that always comes down to that. Look, Yugoslavia, Serbia in this particular, U.S. bombed it for 78 days under Clinton. Supposed to have been over within 1 week. Those damn Serbs just wouldn't surrender. The reason they finally surrendered in the end of the day wasn't because it's not like some people say, oh, there was a ground invasion getting ready to go. They were waiting for that ground invasion. They have redoubted out those mountains. They're sitting there waiting for it. The reason they finally gave up because Yeltsin betrayed him. Yeltsin was a bought-out individual, and the people around him were they betrayed him, told him, "We were not going to back you. We're not going to supply you. We're not going to back you. That's it." And that's the only reason they finally came to it. By which point, the U.S. had bombed chemical plants, including polluting and killing mass fish kill down the whole Danube into the Black Sea. Had hit hospitals, had hit markets, churches, two trains that they said were speeding along in 1940s steam trains. They don't speed along. They actually turned out that they sped the video up fourfold to get it to look like it was speeding along. But it was the same thing, though. So, okay, it didn't work. Plan B, just kill a lot of civilians. Maybe they'll surrender then. And that's what we're seeing now. It's the same thing. I mean, you've got the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, my God, it's run by an Air Force general. Air Force has no concept of war. Air Force just wants to drop bombs because they believe they can break any country and conquer any country with bombs. It's never happened, but they believe in it. They're diehard fanatics. There's even warnings before never let a Air Force general lead the Joint Chiefs of Staff. For God's sakes, that's the only thing they know is how to do is bomb everything, including civilians. And that's what we're seeing now. Yeah, they have no plan. I don't know what. I can't call them mission group. I don't know what the hell the mission is to creep from it.
Even the fact that their chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dan Kane, he's actually the one being quoted in these reports of people saying, yeah, he really warned Trump at the briefings that if you bomb Iran, you're going to get dragged into a prolonged war. They're likely to close the Strait of Hormuz. And now they're saying that Trump was like, oh, no, they won't actually do that. Or the U.S. military can handle it if they do. But clearly, we're seeing the US military is not able to handle anything here when it comes to any kind of approach to this war that they thought was going to be over after a couple days.
Rachel, it's even worse. And I was shocked when I found this out. And I found out from very good sources. The bases, the aviation and naval bases in the Middle East, they don't have bunkers. You know that? They don't have bunkers. As somebody that spent quite a bit of time in the in armor and in infantry, how the hell do you not have bunkers? Well, they don't have bunkers because A, oh, there won't be any war if they shoot at us, it'll only be for a couple of days. And B, we have the anti-aircraft systems to work and we don't have to worry about anything. And that's the mentality they came with. Well, the systems are either destroyed or damaged, or they ran out of missiles because those damned Iranians just won't stop firing. And they have a massive amount of missiles backed up, and they're producing more missiles and more drones as we talk. And these guys don't have bunkers. So right now, it's the equipment being destroyed. And the fear is, sooner or later they're going to go systematically down the on the personnel who don't have anywhere to hide except the buildings they're in, which aren't prepared to be to take a ballistic missile. So sooner or later you're going to start really seeing mass casualties, a lot more. Well, I mean the casualties I'd probably say are 9, 10 times higher than what the U.S. government's admitting to right now. But we're on the cusp of seeing really heavy casualties. They're going to be very hard to write off as health issue, died, not in combat, died from health issue, died from health issue. Also, all these young guys are dying from health issues. Yeah, that's how they usually do things. That pilots are usually written off as automobile accidents. That's how that gets done. But they're screwed. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. And then you get 2,000 guys up in Iraq. Nobody's talking about that. There's three bases, including the Green Zone in Baghdad. They're under fire constantly. Sooner or later, they're going to run out of ammunition. They're going to run out of provisions. They're going to run out of water. They're surrounded. They're getting attacked on a constant daily basis. They're getting hammered by our light artillery and mortar rounds, drones. In fact, one of the Phalanx systems yesterday, the Phalanx systems are used, the chain gun, little bubble things that looks like an R2-D2 unit on the ships. That are used as the Phalanx system is an anti-missile, anti-aircraft system. It's a big chain gun that's chained, that's slaved to a computer system. Well, they put those up on the edges of the Green Zone, the big ambassadorial zone in Baghdad. Well, one of those systems just got taken out yesterday by a drone. So now you've got a big hole in the area that for air defense. It's only a matter of time. They're degrading it on a daily basis. I talked with Ritter when this all started. Said, they're going to send a convoy to get these guys out there, an armored convoy with air cover to get them out. So yeah, that would be the logical thing to do. That was what about 12 days ago. No convoy. The question is, how much food do they have left? How much? Because if I'm a militia and I'm operating that area, okay, where are they getting their water from? Cut the pipes. That'd be the first thing I'd do. That's a siege. You cut them off from everything, whatever electricity, things like that. Well, they probably have generators with enough fuel, but how much fuel do they have? For how many weeks can they go with electricity, emergency electricity? How much ammunition do they have? Do you see a convoy being formed? I mean, it'd have to come out of Turkey probably, because I doubt it you could form it up. Where would you drive it out of? Through besieged Lebanon? I guess they could go through Jordan, but that'd be one hell of a long drive through to get to these guys. So, but not a word about it. There's 2,000 guys. Well, I don't know how many of them are alive still or combat capable, plus civilians. There's a lot of civilians, these diplomats, families, and others in the green zone. They don't want to talk about it because if the media gets wind that there's going to have to be a convoy to get these people out and so on, that looks like a media, that's a mass media loss, right? But on the other hand, you start getting images out of one of these bases overrun. And they've been getting hit by ballistic missiles too from Iran and from Iraq. You get one of these bases overrun, corpses all over the place, American soldiers or civilians, and the rows of POWs walking out. You want to talk about a PR disaster. Mr. Trump, here's your noose, go hang yourself. Do the honorable thing. That's about the extent of that. There will be a PR disaster from hell. But nobody's talking about that either. So this I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, I don't think you can figure that out because you're not as insane and I'm not as insane as Trump. We may be a little bit insane, but we're definitely not as insane as Trump would admit that is.
We're not ranting on social media with the endless paragraphs like he is, because yeah, I read these statements and I'm just like, there's just so much crammed in there. It keeps getting longer and longer by the day with each statement. And it is notable that obviously, he'll claim, oh, we've won the war, right? We win it every day. But then at the same time, he's calling for help and he's saying that, oh, the NATO alliance faces a very bad future if their members don't join in to help force the strait open. Well, I would argue that the NATO alliance is facing a bad future either way because they decided to wage a war against Russia. But on top of that, he's also saying that, oh, well, if China doesn't get in here and open up the Strait of Hormuz, that I'm not going to go to China and meet with Xi Jinping later this month. And I'm like, well, it's open for China, right? It's open for the friendly countries that aren't at war with Iran. So how do you view the position that the multipolar world as a whole, but I guess we can factor in some of these NATO countries are in when they're literally like, no, we're not going to go fight and die in this war that you decided to wage that literally everyone would have told you not to do.
One of my close friends, Pati Abuladze, he's up in the Georgian power circles. His brother-in-law is Kaladze, who is the mayor of Tbilisi. So Kaladze and his family were down in Dubai celebrating his birthday when all this started. They finally got Kaladze back to Georgia with the help of the Russians. By the way, how many Americans are stuck in there without any aid to get them out? American civilians? I'm not, not talking about the rich that can afford their own charter planes out. I'm talking
And in
about Joe
Israel and
Snuffy.
everywhere else, yeah.
Well, Israel is mostly settler, so I don't have much sympathy for them because of what they do. But Joe Snuffy, the oil field worker, or the professor at the university, or the manager over there for whatever company, or the engineer, that. Because most of these societies are run by foreigners, everything but the top layer. If we're going to talk reality, nobody's getting them out, are they? They're just basically, I mean, there was a journalist, and I put this in one of my updates early on, American journalist, they called the hotline that was published, and you listen to the recording, the hotline from the State Department of, don't count on the U.S. government to get you out. You're on your own. Good luck. Bye-bye. And oh, by the way, it's tax season, so do pay your taxes. They didn't add that on, but they should have, pay your taxes because the U.S. government needs the money. But and other than that, just screw off and die if you want to. We don't care. I mean, that's the Russian government's gotten its people out. Other governments have come in there. Chinese have gotten their people out. The U.S. has just dropped, I don't know how many thousands of people. I'd say probably tens of thousands of people and their families because if you're working for Aramco, you're there with your family more likely. Just whatever fortune gives you, that's it. We're not going to come in there to help you out. I mean, they could have organized convoys, bus convoys, or something else, but they haven't. Obviously enough, they haven't. So I don't know. I mean, this is it's insane. It's truly, truly insane what we're dealing with at this point. And this government is this regime in Washington is it's detached. I mean, seriously detached. As far as the Arabs go, they've all figured out U.S. doesn't have their back. Like day three, the Saudis were already whining. Well, wait a minute, there's nothing to defend us with. Yeah, because it's all in Israel. So if I was, and what he was saying, by the way, going back to Georgia, because the Georgians, they play themselves off as these passive Russophobes. Of course, they're making money from trade and all that, and Russian tourism, and trade between Russia and Turkey, because they're right in the middle. But they're Russophobes, so they're kind of trying to still get up toward the U.S. or have as a backer. They're in a panic. The elites there are in absolute panic because they're looking down there and going, shit, they don't have our backs. They can't even physically have anybody's back right now. They don't have their own backs. We're screwed. We've got crappy relations. We've still got semi-crappy relations with Russia. Turkey's looking at it and going, well, Georgia was once part of the Ottoman Empire, so. So now what do we do? The smart thing to do is have normal relations with Russia because Russia will never let Turkey go into the Caucasus. But that's an aside. But that's one of those things. The U.S. has lost a massive amount of reputation. It does not have your back unless you happen to have a Star of David on your flag and you pay a lot of politicians lots of money. Saudis pay a lot of politicians lots of money, but not enough, obviously not. Not enough of their billionaires live in America and spend huge amounts of money on Congress. So
Yeah, that's it.
if I was an average European NATO state that's pissing under Russia's fence, it, because you think you got a big dog behind you, I'd really start thinking about, do you have the big dog behind you? Is it really even a big dog, or maybe a medium-sized dog, or maybe smaller? That's what I'd be thinking. I don't know if they are thinking. I don't know if they're capable of thinking that. The European leadership is not exactly for the most part, very bright. It's like a very, very dim light bulb, if one is even switched on in there. But if I was the average guy, I'd be really thinking about my choices, my life choices at that point. It wasn't worth pissing Russia off because, nah, they're not there, buddy. They're incapable. Everybody said that, I mean, anybody worth any analytics has said for a long time the U.S. is not capable, or how should I put it? As one of my fraternity brothers when I was in the university said, your ass can't cash the checks your mouth was writing. That's the U.S. right now. It's written a check for everybody. Yeah, we got your back, but reality. No, and a lot of people have been saying it. I've been saying it. But it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to see it in front of you and go, damn, they're right.
Yeah, the US just keeps overplaying their hand over and over again, right? You think that like, okay, they're not gonna take that next step. Oh, they absolutely are. The last thing I wanted to bring up here really comes back to Iran's retaliation, because Iran has been warning for months, years now that look, if you target us, if you continue to attack us, we are going to retaliate harder each time. We're going to hit not only Israel with ballistic missiles, we're going to target all of these little Gulf monarchies that host US military bases. If you guys come and you attack our oil depots and refineries, we're going to do the exact same to you. And now we are seeing Iran do exactly what they said they would do. So, how do you see kind of the state of their retaliation and their ability to really continue this war and to expose the myth of US supremacy to the entire world?
Well, people and countries have a tendency of projecting their own moral values onto everyone else. A thief or a swindler, the first thing he's going to say, well, everybody's like me. I'm just getting it better than anybody else, or I'm doing them before they do me. He doesn't want to say, well, yeah, most people are honest and I'm just a scumbag because, that I have to face certain moral issues. Well, if I'm the only scumbag, why am I the only scumbag and everybody else is honest? Maybe there's something wrong with me. Countries do the same thing. It's one of the problems that Russia's had that it's projecting Russia doesn't want war. Everybody So everybody really doesn't want war. So why are we going down this road with Ukraine and everything else? Well, the problem is the elites in the West and quite a few people that back them want war. And I've been saying that for 3 years. You're not looking realistically at the people you're dealing with. And a lot of them really want war. They may not understand fully in their minds what that entitles outside of, video games and Hollywood, but they're dead set on it. And the other problem, so the problem here is, look at the U.S. government. My God, man, it is the den of skull drudgery. They lie as they breathe, as the day is long. They bluff, they lie, they cheat. Oh, what is bluffing? It's lying. And they expect everyone else does the same. So when Iran tells them flat out, we're just going to whack everything that's out there. We're going to close the Straits of Hormuz. We're going to start smacking you left and right and every other base you have and anything that moves. They'll do what we tell them. Or, yeah, they're lying. They're incapable and blah, blah, because that's how Washington works. And these people's psychology, they can't understand. They can't put themselves in somebody else's shoes because they expect everybody's just like them. And all of a sudden, Iran starts shooting. And the telling moment was that second day, NBC had the interview with the, I keep forgetting the guy's name. He's the head of foreign, he's the Minister of Foreign Affairs for Iran. And they asked him,
Oh, Abbas Araghchi, yeah.
Abbas Araghchi, that's it, Abbas. And they asked him, how can you justify hitting American bases? And it's just, come again? You attacked. Oh, and then, we didn't declare war on Iran. Iran declared war on us because they were shooting at our bases, from which you are shooting into Iran first. It's you start to realize you're dealing with some really either really stupid or really sick people on the other side.
Yeah, and the media has they've kind of forced their hand to a certain extent to be at least a little bit honest about this war. And that's very unusual, right? When you have the New York Times coming out and saying, yeah, it was a US Tomahawk that hit that girl's school, or you have, some of these various reports that are coming out and that are admitting Trump was warned, his administration, they had all of the information about what was going to happen, and yet they still chose to get into this war anyway, and it's not looking good for the US, that is for sure.
And that's the key that should be repeated constantly. War of choice. They chose to get, there was no, Trump's tried to throw everybody on the bus already. So that kind of pressure. We said, Marco Rubio, Vance, and blah, 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 the whole list of names. They all came and said, any day now, any second now, they're going to attack. So we've got to attack first. Did they really say that?
Right. Well, they said Israel was going to attack first, and that was enough of an imminent threat that the US was
Exactly.
like, "Oh, we got to go in there." And yeah, I think this is going to be one of those wars that is studied for years and years to come as we look back and we're like, "How did we get into that?" And exactly as you said, did we have a choice? Well, yes, we did. But for Iran, this is an existential threat to their country. So they are going to respond accordingly, which is exactly what they're doing right now. I know that there is certainly a lot at stake here all around. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join me today to break down all of the latest here. Stanislav Krepivnik, a former U.S. Army officer, military and geopolitical expert, and host of the In the Eyes of Truth podcast. Thank you so much for your time and insight.